symbol of excellence in sports entertainment.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of X-Ray with the Doctor. Dr. Tom is in the house. Dr. Tom, how are you today?
Doing great, Paul. Always doing great when I get to talk to you.
Oh, that's the answer I was hoping for.
Listen, I knew you would.
Glad to see you, and I know we're excited to be together this week because we're talking classic WWF this week.
Yes, yes, yes. And when you talk classic WWF, that doesn't always mean it's going to be good. But I've got to tell you, this week, it's not going to be good. It's going to be great. When you have two guys who are not only were the top stars of the time and of the era, but they did go through the territory system. They knew each other prior to coming to WWF at this time, and they understood how to control the audience, how to make the crowd do what they needed to do. And it was the time period for superheroes. And I think both of these guys were the antithesis, or were the actual prototype, not antithesis. I don't know what I'm saying today. It's already been one of those days. But obviously, Paul Orndorff and Hulk Hogan were the stars of the day, selling out arenas all over the country and making sure everybody understood that they were the premier professional wrestlers of the day.
Dr. Tom, I'm going to try to see how many times I can weave in the word antithesis throughout the rest of the show.
Sure. I have, you know, I need a dictionary next to me. That's all I'm saying.
A thesaurus. There you
go. Yes, or damn.
So listen, I'm really looking forward to this one. This was my childhood. I mean, I'm trying to think if Dad let me stay up for this one or if he recorded it on the VCR tape so I could watch it the next day. It's Saturday night's main event. It was 11:30. It was replacing Saturday Night Live at this point. And you had Orndorff, Hogan, Steel Cage. It's the Big Blue. So let's go ahead and get started for all of you that want to watch with us. If you're listening on the audio, if not, you can watch on video. That'd be great. But it's on Peacock. Peacock is finally pretty much loaded up with all the old content. We're excited to say. Not sure we're loving the catalog system of how they're doing this with the episodes, as Dr. Tom just shakes his head. But we found it, and you can too. You're looking for Season 3, Episode 1. It's dated in there January 3rd, 1987. We're going to start 6 minutes, 17 seconds. It is Paul Orndorff. It is Hulk Hogan. It is Big Blue. And we're going to start, after I do the countdown, by playing it. We're going to do a little bit of here Vince McMahon talking about the match. And then Dr. Tom and I will jump in and get this thing going. So, Dr. Tom, are you ready for the countdown? Okay. So, are you ready? We'll do this countdown. 3, 2, 1, play.
It seems to me, McMahon, that I already heard this music.
Obviously, you have. Paul Orndorff stole Hulk's music, and tonight he will attempt to steal, cajole, whatever possible, the title away from this man who is now testing the strength of the steel cage.
Well, I'll tell you what, I don't think Mr. Wonderful is going to have to steal anything, McMahon, because nothing can be stolen inside a steel cage match. There will definitely be a clear-cut winner.
And champion Hulk Hogan entering the ring, I believe, the way that he just might exit. Over the top rope, only two ways out. That's over the top rope or through the door. And the champion ripping away the T-shirt. And these fans are going nuts.
What a show of strength on the part of Hogan, McMahon. He can tear a T-shirt.
Well, I think you'll see plenty in the way of strength from the champion Hogan and perhaps from the challenger Orndorff as well.
Well, I'll tell you, ripping a T-shirt.
So let me ask you this, right, as Orndorff attacks Hogan. Wow. Which was retired first, Hogan's title belt that Orndorff is now whipping with, or your VCR?
I think the VCR last. This is the Hogan 86, so that belt would have been retired before my VCR.
All right, just wanted to make sure here. But we neglected to mention how important Bobby Heenan is at ringside, and the elements and action he provides is so out of the realm of what's happening today, because nobody understands psychology like Heenan.
Dr. Tom, Bobby Heenan was the antithesis of what a wrestling manager would be.
We scored right there. Thank you so much. All right. So, yes, he was. And Joey Morella is sitting or standing ringside, and you notice that no good referee, Danny Davis coming down. A lot of storylines in this match, but you have to understand, Paul Orndorff and Hulk Hogan were going all over the country, headlining this match on various shows, various cards, doing double shots sometimes, meaning they would have one match in one city, get on a private jet, fly to the next event, and get there just in time to go to the ring. But something a lot of people don't think about. Look at the shape both of these guys are in right now. The schedule they were keeping was incredible. And they had to go to the gym at the same time. So, I mean, when you talk about having those 18, 20, 21, 22 hours, sometimes no sleep days or nights, it was insane. The schedule these guys were keeping was incredible. And they still had to look the parts. They still had to both go in there and be superhuman and deliver exciting and entertaining matches. The style compared to a territory like Dallas or Alabama or anything like that was drastic, if you will. Hulk Hogan, Paul Orndorff knew how to wrestle. They were both trained in Tampa with Hiro Matsuda. So they knew each other and very familiar with each other's styles and knew for the average or the casual wrestling fan, let me say that, putting a cage match on in place of Saturday Night Live, back then the crowd for Saturday Night Live especially would have to say, wait a minute, what's this? Let's see what's going to happen here. Mm. So not just anybody could have pulled this off.
Dr. Tom, as you were talking through that, you mentioned they would take this match on the road several places, and it triggered a thought in my mind, and I didn't even think about this until you said that. December 13th, 1986, not even a month before this, they were in the Philadelphia Spectrum. Dr. Tom, they wrestled in the Big Blue, and it was Paul Bromwell's very first fan-attended wrestling event that I was ever at, and I saw this match.
And you never forget this reason exactly. Orndorff and Hogan, they were superhuman. They were action figures come to life.
Yes.
And that's why they were regarded as superstars wherever they went. They were doing talk shows. They were going out and wrestlers were being seen in places they previously might not have been invited or looked down upon. But with Hogan and Orndorff bringing this form, this style of match, this form of entertainment to people, it was becoming mainstream. And the storytelling, it all goes back to the basics and fundamentals. It's obvious that Heenan and Orndorff have their evil referee friend at ringside, Danny Davis. Joey Morella, the son of Gorilla Monsoon, was the official referee. Mm. But Jesse Ventura, Vince McMahon are consummate storytellers, and I don't think they missed a beat either on commentary, explaining how Orndorff and Hogan are rivals and don't like each other very much at all.
You're absolutely right. It's the full package. You have Jesse, who's the agitator. He's going to be pointing out everything, the heel commentator, if you will, against Hogan, with the straight man and Vince McMahon, who's going to be pumping up that hero figure. So fantastic. Both just very animated and exciting and edge of the seat for an audience that's listening. And then you have Heenan, who is perfectly teamed with Mr. Wonderful, who's that, again, the ant, you know, the guy that just makes you want to hate and really cheer against Orndorff and really cheer hard for Hogan. And Hogan, who just draws all that charisma. It's just a perfect combination all around.
And after all these years watching this match, what stands out to me is the body language, the selling, and letting everyone understand they're not just trying to go through the door. They're making it obvious to everyone in the building. They're going to try and climb the cage. And a lot of people don't like the big blue cage. Personally, I thought it was a great looking cage. It reminded me of the Freddie Blassie cage in Los Angeles. Now watch this.
Here
this is a great false finish. Orndorff and Hogan go out of the cage at the same time. Joey Morella raises one hand. Danny Davis raises the heel's hand. Morella raises Hulk Hogan.
Yes.
But there's controversy here. The fans on this side saw Hogan win. The fans on the other side saw Orndorff win. And my gosh, what a predicament we have. Everybody is on their feet. And Danny Davis isn't going to take it from that punk Morella. So, once again, you have a great storyline. You have a great good guy in Hulk Hogan and a tremendous bad guy in Orndorff and Bobby Heenan.
This is the memory that sticks out like no other. This timed them descending and hitting the mat at the same time and the controversy that surrounded it. Then they went to commercial break. I'll never forget. Now we don't have the commercials in, but they went to commercial break, which left us all hanging on our couches, or for me, hurry up and hitting the fast forward button on Sunday morning with my cereal. But it was just so, can we get back to what's happening? What's going on here?
You
loved it.
If you listen to the voices, you listen to not only the commentators of Vince and Jesse, but you had Howard Finkel. Howard Finkel's emotion, Howard Finkel's feeling to let everybody know that the match is going to continue.
There we
and,
go.
And the people popped because they understood that their hero is still in this. I'm actually coming on an Allstate commercial here in the Peacock.
Really?
Yes. Oh. How does that work?
I don't know.
Well, I don't either, because you can't forward through these things, Paul. I have 14 seconds left.
Well,
I tried
ahead,
the other night.
Let it roll, and then I'll let you know where I'm at in the show. You can catch up. We'll keep rolling.
I'll do my best.
We'll keep going, doing this on the fly. We got so much.
Yes,
good
we
here.
Do.
We have Orndorff now has Hogan back in the cage, and he's climbing the top rope. Let me know when your Allstate commercial's done, and we'll get you caught up here.
Commercial's done.
Okay.
They're back in Hartford, Connecticut. Orndorff just.
I'm glad we're there too.
My goodness gracious.
I'm at 16, 35, 36, 37, 38.
Let me go here because I'm an
I have Danny Davis finally getting taken down to the.
1642. How about that?
47, 48. 49, 50, 51.
All right, I'm 50 now. We'll be a couple seconds behind.
That's totally fine. We're good.
There we go.
Danny Davis for bearing with us, group. This is all good.
Yeah,
we're talking wrestling.
Sure we are. Fine. Well, no, actually, this is sports entertainment.
That's right. We're back to sports entertainment this week.
We watched wrestling.
This is the antithesis of sports entertainment.
Yes, it is. We were watching wrestling from Dallas with the Midnight Express, which was fantastic not too long ago. But this is classic sports entertainment by two wrestlers from the old school who understood there is a difference.
Dr. Tom, I got to ask a question since we're here, and I know we're getting called up. Michael McClanahan, back again this week, says, which type of cage did you prefer? Were you a big blue cage guy or the more modern steel cage?
I enjoyed the look of the blue cage. I also thought it would be easier for the guys to climb up. my understanding was they made this blue cage for Freddie Blassie. But look at Hulk Hogan take those punches and come back for this for a baby face comeback, a superhero comeback.
Yeah,
is about to take place. But I enjoyed the cages that ripped your flesh off your head or off your arm or off your body, whatever it was. This was a cage where everybody could see the action through the gaping holes, and it was TV friendly, I guess. And it was, to me, visually, it looked menacing, if you will. The steel cage matches they used in the South was something I was used to and something I worked in. And you could tell the same story. You could still climb the cage and go through the door. But for Hogan and Orndorff, this set the stage, and it also worked for these guys because everybody got to see what was going on. Everybody could feel every punch, and the emotion and feeling of the crowd certainly helped the TV audience on NBC watching this night.
Adam Arpin would chime in next. He said, what was it about the chemistry between Mr. Wonderful and Hulk Hogan that Mr. Wonderful couldn't recreate with any other top guy, thus leaving him out of the main event picture otherwise?
I don't necessarily agree with the premise, but I will say this. Hogan and Orndorff had known each other for a long time. They're both from Tampa, or both from Florida anyway. Paul was right outside of Tampa. But they both worked and wrestled for Eddie Graham. They both were taught and trained by a guy named Hiro Matsuda. So they had the chemistry, and he was a great opponent. Paul was a great babyface at one time. He was a great heel, obviously. And that chemistry is hard to match. When you grow up with somebody and go to the same office, learn from the same guy, learn from the same coach, it translates, and it's obvious. These guys understood the mechanics of the match, the places to put things. And that takes years to understand and comprehend. Bobby Heenan was a wrestler / manager. But as a manager, he took some of the greatest bumps and made everything spectacular. The hero Hulk Hogan, finally.
Yes.
He doesn't go out the door. He climbs over the ring. What a heroic feat. What a win. And what an announcement by a Hall of Fame ring announcer, Howard Finkel. So many guys wanted to be introduced by Howard, myself included, just Absolutely. With the rhythm, the cadence that he brought to the match. It added that much more excitement. Now watch Heenan take this huge bump, all to make the hero, all to make Hogan look great. And watch this bump outside the cage. Hard to find anybody who can do things like Bobby Heenan can these days. Hard to find anybody who can do things like Hogan and Orndorff can do these days. And that means getting the emotion, getting the feeling from the fans that they did.
And back we are to the timed fall off the side of the cage. And when looking at it without the commentary, to me, and I'd love us to have an argument about it, to me, it's clear Hogan wins.
Well, that's because you were on that side of the arena.
I love it.
But to me, it was clear Orndorff won.
I'm telling you. Yeah. We sound like McMahon and Javentura. Right. Hogan's legs are straight. Heenan, Orndorff's are bent. Oh, so fun. But what a great angle.
Yes, great timing, great angle, great TV work by everybody. Great storytelling all the way around. And one thing you certainly can't say about Hulk Hogan is he did not know how to tell a story. And you can never say that he didn't have the crowd eating out of the palm of his hand. Whether he was a good guy or a bad guy, Hulk Hogan certainly had that charisma, and you can't teach charisma. You either have it or you don't. You either feel it or you don't.
Well, Dr. Tom, a couple fun facts before we get to some more questions for you, and then we'll wrap up. This is the final match of this feud between the two. So there you go there. It is literally the second to last singles match these two would ever have against each other. So again, another stat maybe you weren't aware of, those that are listening. And last but not least, this was the fourth best rated Saturday night's main event with a 10.6 rating on NBC, which I don't think anybody's surprised of. It's one of the, again, monumental moments, again, from my childhood that I remember from Saturday night's main event. Lots of huge angles. And I think why was it such a big deal? Because they were rare. And when they had them on those events, they always had some type of big storyline or some big build, or it meant something with Saturday night's main event. Some kind of major storyline would develop or come out of one of those shows.
Well, as well as should have been that way. You had the biggest audience looking at your product, maybe tuning in to see what was going to take Saturday Night Live's place that night. But when was the last time that anybody has seen a 10.6 rating? Been a while. So these guys were doing something right. And all the major stars from all the major territories and a few minor ones found their way to WWF at the time. And I'm using WWF because they were not WWE back then. But one thing I think they always had was the ingredients to make superstars. They had the recipe. They knew how to put their guys in the spotlight, and it was up to the individual talent then to either shine or sink. And so when you had guys like Paul Orndorff and Hulk Hogan traveling all over the country, producing matches like this, it was special. And it made sense to put it on the main event at the end of the run because people were still interested. Everything those guys did in the ring meant something, and it led up to the first finish, the second finish, and Hogan vanquishing the bad guys in Bobby Heenan and Paul Orndorff. So it was nothing short of spectacular.
All right, Dr. Tom, Jeremy Priest says, where would you rank the Hogan versus Orndorff feud?
Oh my gosh, it's got to be in the top five because these guys were drawing unbelievable money. And not just, like I said, not just one show. They would do a matinee and get on a plane and go do a night show and then do it again that weekend. You know, people talk about what the schedule was like back in the 80s, and guys jokingly would say, well, we worked Monday through Sunday and twice on the weekends. So, or Monday through Friday and twice on the weekends. That's twice on Saturday, twice on Sunday. Mid-South ran like that. New York ran like that. It was brutal, but that's what you signed up for. If you're in wrestling at that time, that's the way it was. And New York or WWF was changing the landscape. And I think with Orndorff and Hogan on top, it certainly ranks right up there in the top five.
All right. Michael McClanahan's back. He says, what does Dr. Tom think about cage matches finishing or being won by escaping the cage? Does he wish it was only pinfall or submission? How does the strategy of structuring a match change when pinfalls and submissions are removed from the equation?
I really think it makes it more exciting. I would much rather see, in fact, it used to be the only way you could win a cage match was climbing over the top. Why have a cage if you can just pin the guy? I know you want to keep people in, you want to keep people out, but the extra added excitement was you have to climb out of the cage to win. Anybody can go through the door, but if you get a guy who may not be that agile, you have to figure out, all right, this puts him in jeopardy. Hey, let's put him in a cage. The only way to win is climb out. And these days, or I don't know how long ago it actually started, you could have a pinfall in there, probably because somebody figured out they couldn't climb over the cage. But it was obvious with in this instance that both guys were able to. And again, you saw it when Hogan climbed over the cage. It was exciting to see this huge giant actually walking or climbing over the cage, touching the floor, and becoming the winner. So I personally prefer climbing over the cage.
All right. Jeremy Priest is up next. He says, in my opinion, the payoffs of a feud now seem lackluster to the payoffs during the early days. Why do you think that is? Star power, storytelling, etc.?
I think the overindulgence, the overflow, the overdone finishes, the chance that you have to, you have a pay-per-view every month and you have to wrap it up, or you have to get it to it, you have to build to it. Whereas before, it would be, you could take as much as 6 months to a year before you would have a blow off. And these days is just too common. There's too much that has to be done in too little of a time. That's my opinion. But I just really feel that once you rush something, or once you get into something, it has to wrap up that month or the next 3 weeks or whatever it may be. It's tough to get involved. But back in the 80s, some of the 90s, you didn't have that rush, and you could build and build, let it simmer and have the heels get some heat and not rush to the next opponent or the next thing that's going to happen. Let it build, let it simmer for a little bit.
All right. Our friend Lenny Bonkin's here with a couple quick questions. He said, Hulk Hogan was usually booked against monster heels, Bundy, Stud, et cetera, and worked well against them. Why do you think the Orndorff feud worked so well, even though Paul Orndorff wasn't a giant?
Well, Paul Orndorff may not have been, I think Paul was about 6'1", 6'2", so he wasn't a small guy by any means, and he had a reputation. Paul was a pretty bad guy. Paul Paul was very dangerous. Let me say this outside the ring. And I think his reputation in Florida followed him wherever he went. And they brought that realism, that authenticity to the ring. And I think people could look at Paul Orndorff, look at the shape he's in, listen to him talk, and understand that this guy was the real deal. He was not playing a part. He wasn't acting like a badass. He was a badass. And that's what Hogan needed at the time. They worked well together. They had great chemistry on stage and off stage. And that's what it takes. I say it all the time, that what happens outside the ring really is very important, and a lot more important sometimes than what happens in the ring. Yes, you have to produce. Yes, you have to know what you're doing. No doubt about it. But you may spend 15 minutes in the ring, but the rest of the time you're spending outside the ring. That's really where you're going to be judged and looked at. And Paul Orndorff and Hulk Hogan had chemistry outside the ring. Hulk wanted to work with Orndorff. Orndorff wanted to work with Hulk. Obviously, it was a money spot. So I think that's what really made it work. They were authentic inside and outside the ring. Both respected each other, and the fans could tell that these guys were the real deal.
Lenny goes on to say, had history been written differently, how well do you think WrestleMania 3 would have done with Hogan versus Orndorff as the main event?
Well, again, speculating. I think WrestleMania 3 would have done fantastic business no matter what. But when you have Andre the Giant, who Hogan has wrestled many, many times over the years in different places, with this being promoted as it was, the first meeting, and has never been slammed, and all these other elements that if you weren't a real wrestling fan, you didn't know all this. You took it on face value. And just assuming that everyone understood and knew that Andre had been slammed quite a few times prior to meeting Hogan, it didn't matter. It was promoted the right way. It was promoted as the biggest event ever, and it was certainly one of the biggest events ever. So you have to have the machine behind you. You have to have promotion. You have to have all these other things. But I think Orndorff and Hogan would have done tremendous business no matter where it was. Well, we'll never know. I don't know that we're done Andre Hogan business, but who knows? I don't.
Right. Okay. His final question, how important does Dr. Tom feel Bobby Heenan was as a manager for Mr. Wonderful?
Extremely important. While Paul Paul could certainly cut a great promo. It was Heenan who added the touch to it. You know, we talk about Cornette and Paul Heyman and things like that. They're in the same category as a Bobby Heenan. They both learned from Bobby Heenan, and Paul learned a lot from the managers up north. But Bobby Heenan was instrumental, hugely instrumental in the Hogan-Orndorff angle feud, because Bobby was witty. While Paul may have been funny and witty at times, Bobby was never at a loss for a comeback or words to make sure the match got over.
Absolutely. Final question from Hornets Beard Guy. Do you remember who the first wrestler, that, in your recollection, to receive a 10-bell salute? Obviously, last week we were talking about the passing of Bobby Eaton. Paul Orndorff recently passed. Do you remember who the first wrestler that you can recall receiving a 10-bell salute?
Yes, I do, actually. I remember Bobby Shane in Houston. He wrestled in Houston, Texas in his younger days, and then eventually wound up in Tampa and was in a plane flying back with Buddy Colt, Dennis McCord, and Gary Hart. And they flew into Tampa, flying back from, maybe it was Miami, I'm not sure of the town now, but flying back into Tampa. And it was a storm, and Buddy had his, didn't have, he had his instrument reading or whatever it was, I'm not sure, but they crashed in the bay. Buddy Colt, Gary Hart, Dennis McCord, who later became Austin Idol, and Bobby Shane. Bobby was the only one who passed away. He couldn't get out of his seatbelt. So that Friday in Houston, they had a 10-bell salute for Bobby Shane. So that's the first one I remember. I'm not sure who started that tradition, but sure. It's a nice tradition. Yep.
Well, Dr. Tom, thank you so much. Diagnosis for this sports entertainment match that we watched today from you, Doctor.
Take six and call me in the morning. Let me know how that worked. Yeah. No, great match. Again, a classic study of two classic wrestlers who knew how to implement sports entertainment, hit their cues, hit their times, knew where everything was in the match and where it needed to be placed, and how long they needed to live there, if they needed to live there at all, and perform an exciting, entertaining match for the masses on network TV. Fantastic match.
It was a little creativity with the timed drop out of both of them, with the heel ref and the babyface ref on either side with those guys too. Something new, something fresh.
They had some brilliant minds back then. Pat Patterson certainly coming up with a lot of that match. And that's one thing that WWE nowadays especially is always looking for: brilliant minds, creative minds, and people who understand the goal. What's the goal? What's our object here? What are we trying to get over? And then it's up to the talent to implement that. So this was perfect execution on everyone's part.
Well, you have a doctor, Tom Pritchard, and then you have the creative genius in Bruce Pritchard. So a lot of talent in that Pritchard family.
Well, on one side anyway. And I'm not taking credit for that, just so you know.
I just wanted to serve you up and wait for the spike.
Go right ahead. Yeah, I knew you would. I knew you would. I'm putting them over, man.
Well, listen, Dr. Tom, before we jump out here, go ahead and talk about your wrestling academy, where they can find your shirts and all that good stuff.
Yeah, you can find out all our information, not only shirts, but my curriculum on the front page. Just go to jpwrestlingacademy.com. We have a new class coming up in October. And still time to check out all the things happening at JPWA. We have some learning libraries to go to. We have some student journals. We have a lot of stuff that we're streaming on Patreon. But all that information is in one place, jpwrestlingacademy.com. Check it out. Find out from t-shirts to books to all things JPWA.
There you go. JPWA is where it's at. Listen, Dr. Tom, we're going to be back next week. We're going back to World Class Championship Wrestling. It's Kerry Von Erich versus Ric Flair in a classic cage match. We're going back to another cage match, not Big Blue, but it's a cage match with Michael Hayes. He's going to be involved as well. It's Christmas time, 1982. I'm looking forward to that one. I know you are too.
Well, you talk about the differences, and they were just inklings back then in 82, but the differences between the National Wrestling Alliance and the Worldwide Wrestling Federation. I think at that time might have been World Wrestling Federation. But Ric Flair was a wrestler's wrestler, and Hulk Hogan, while he was tremendous and talented, was considered more of a sports entertainer. And you'll see the reasons why in this next match coming up next time right here on X-Ray.
Ah, I love it. You're getting this so good at that. I thought you were going to close the show with that voice.
No, I'm leaving that all to you.
All right, well, guys, we hope you enjoyed this show, and we will be back again next week for another episode of X-Ray with the Doctor, Dr. Tom Pritchard.